Soccer fans, gear up at Soccer 90, DFW's largest in-store collection. Real Madrid, Man U, Juventus, FC Dallas, and a whole lot more. Soccer 90 at Toyota Stadium, next door to the National Soccer Hall of Fame in Frisco, or soccer90.com. Soccer 90, love it, live it, wear it.
It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, two guys who like to watch the ball go into the old onion bag. Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Trossard can, pulling it back for Kukure! And he also breaks his Brighton duck in some style. An afternoon that's gone from bad to worse for Manchester United. Miserable performance. They find themselves two down against a side who've won only three at home all season.
Hi-de-ho, P1s. Welcome to today's Kick Around. Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks soccer and all that implies. Don't forget, you can also find us on our website, thekickaround.com. You don't even need the three W's before that. Hi, it's me, Peter. And also in this broadcasting mecca, known as The Ticket, it is noted soccer expert and man of the world, Andy Dalton Swift.
Peter, your voice sounds so deep today. You've been taking voice lessons for your radio gig?
I'm doing a Barry White impersonation drag show at one of the bars in Deep Ellum.
You're dragging a little bit today. I don't know if you're glum
because of
a
allergies.
Certain game.
No.
Oh, okay, that explains
good Lord, my
okay,
allergies.
That explains the voice, too.
Just brutalizing me.
Okay.
It like woke up this morning, and it was like somebody had stuffed pollen in my head, just poured it into my nostrils.
That's why it looks like you're crying. So I got it all wrong. I thought it was for different reasons,
No, at this point,
Premier
losing
League soccer and all.
Losing at Brighton for nothing does nothing. I'm numb.
You're numb.
I'm very, very, very numb. Today, we will talk about all sorts of things, including catching up with what is going in the Premier League. Chelsea has a new owner. We also have a need to take a peek at what's happening at the top of the championship table. I want to take a few minutes later in the show to talk about, and I know this is going to drive some of you nuts, but just stick with me here. I want to spend a segment talking about the Seattle Sounders because they did something of high importance and value that I think everybody, if you love this game, should know about. And they happen to be in town later tonight. So
let's do that.
We'll talk about that. And we will do America's favorite soccer segment known as The Dribble. Mm. But earlier this week, one of the most amazing, I don't know, events, moments, things, I don't even know how to describe it. Real Madrid's comeback over Manchester City to win the Champions League semifinal, second leg, and first leg aggregate in the manner that it happened was utterly one of the most mind-bending things I've ever witnessed in all my years of watching this sport. And my question for you, Andrew, is this more about the magic of Madrid or the curse of City?
I think in the in this case, and it wasn't so much a great game as it was a really exciting finish to the game. I think in this case, it's more about the magic that this Madrid team is kind of, I don't know, relying on to get through round after round after round, because this is not the only series where they had to overcome a deficit late in the aggregate to get through.
No, in fact, as this was going on, you texted me the most amazing stat that I hadn't even dawned on me, and then we ended up tweeting it out, and it went kind of viral, which was what?
That they were always losing at the 75th minute mark in the round of 16, in the quarterfinals, and in the semis.
On aggregate.
On aggregate.
Yes.
Of the second game, 75-minute mark,
they were down. Yeah, against PSG, they were down 2-0, and one on aggregate, 3-2, and against Chelsea, they were down 3-4 on aggregate and ended up winning that 5-4.
Yep.
And then against City, they were obviously down
by two
and came back and won that thing 3-2.
So it's nuts. So I think there's a little bit of both of what you say. part of the issue, I think, on the City side, because I didn't think they played a terrible game. Like, minutes 1 through 80, right? Till right after they scored their first goal, they had everything in control.
How about this? From the second minute of the first leg until the, what is the, 92nd minute of the second leg.
They led, right?
Manchester City was ahead.
Right. And so after they went up 1-0, Grealish missed a couple of, and I don't know if you can fault him. I mean, one was a save off the line, and one was a great save by the keeper, Courtois. So, you know, City came really close to really putting it away. This is the thing, is when Real Madrid scored their first goal in the 90th, suddenly City was on their heels, and City's not used to playing on their heels in that environment. City's so used to, for the last 5 years, always being in control. And I don't know how well they react to adversity and once they're down, how well they react to having to react to that.
Well, I think one of the things that hasn't been talked about enough is Ancelotti, who ends up winning this game. He does it in this insanely calm manner. Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example of why we all looked at each other cross-eyed when he took the Everton gig. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
The man has now won the championship in all five of Europe's top leagues.
Yeah, crazy.
He won it with Milan, PSG, Chelsea, Bayern, and now Real Madrid. That is ridiculous.
It is.
And I really feel like the way that he set this team up, he put his older midfielders out there to just to kind of control and
absorb
the game. And then when he needed it, he put all of his energy and youth into the game and just created chaos. Mm-hmm. And there were moments earlier in the game where you began to wonder if Benzema had used up all of his luck. He had a couple of opportunities that he missed earlier in the game. And City had multiple opportunities even before the Grealish incidents where they could have put the game away.
Yeah, it wasn't Benzema's best game. And you could even argue that you felt like the magic has run out for Madrid. You didn't feel like it was a team that could eventually overcome, even when it was just one goal. Right?
Yeah. Think about this. In the first half, City missed Kevin De Bruyne's opportunity in the 15th, Silva's volley that Courtois saved in the 20th, Jesus's bad opportunity that he blew in the 23rd, and Foden's just before halftime in the 39th minute.
Yeah, Foden's, right, yeah.
All of those opportunities for City to put this thing away, but when Mahrez puts in the goal to make it whatever the score was at that point, 5-3 on aggregate. It felt like toast. It was church at that point.
And especially the way that City was then countering with Grealish, right?
Yes. And then it just went haywire. It took 88 seconds.
Yeah. Now, I have a question for you. When Real Madrid scored that first goal in the 90th, right, and they showed 5 minutes of added time, did part of you not think, oh, man, 5 minutes is a lot here. I think Madrid has a good chance.
Based on the way the game had gone, I mean, part of me thought, okay, here's where Madrid does a Madrid thing. But the rest of it was like, there's no possible way Pep and these guys let this happen.
Yeah.
And even when it went to extra time, I still thought, man, there's no way they fart this way.
No, that's where I think City is not used to being in those spots. City's just not used to being down, and like they've been so consistently better than the rest of their competition in EPL, even more than Liverpool, because Liverpool, they've been close record wise over the last 5 years, but it seems Liverpool has always had to struggle a little bit more to get those wins, right?
It's so weird, because the other thing to think about when it comes to Real Madrid in this particular Champions League campaign, a lot of people have forgotten that moment early in the group stage when they lost to that little tiny team from that breakoff nation Transnistria, the little Soviet-loved...
What's the name of that team?
Sheriff.
Sheriff, yeah. Yeah, 2-1
at home.
Now, it was an upset, and we were like, yeah, that's terrible, but it was also part of this Madrid is on the decline thinking that the soccer world had. Like, Madrid, Barcelona, both are toast this 2021-22 season, right? This both league, Champions League, both of those teams are really going to struggle. But while Barcelona didn't really find a way to turn around, despite them beating Real Madrid in league play pretty badly one day, Madrid ended up winning the La Liga title, and they've found a way to get through Champions League. And this is why maybe they are that effing team. And I know that always goes to like a Cinderella story, but you can almost argue that this Madrid season in Champions League is a little bit of a Cinderella
story.
Well,
when you're playing Man City, that's the one very rare instance where Real Madrid's not the hated evil team. Mm-hmm. Well, because PSG. It's City, because of City's ownership and all of that stuff.
When they played PSG also.
Okay, fair enough. That's a good one. Think about this. City under Pep now has never made it past. They've never won the Champions League. And since 2010, while they've continuously made it, they've dropped out of the round of 16 five times, the group stage once, the quarterfinals three times, semifinals second, and the final, and losing the final once that last year against Chelsea.
Yeah. And sometimes it's been like,
and it's the one
losses.
Trophy you know the ownership wants.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 99% sure if you told them you will win Champions League if you could give up all the other domestic stuff, would you do it? And they would say, yes.
Right. Yes, we would.
Yeah. And now the only thing left for them to win is the domestic title.
Yes. Now that leads to the question of how much this impacts them, impacts the rest of their season. Like, are the players mentally spent?
Yeah, especially this first game coming up tomorrow.
Tomorrow
right,
against
Newcastle.
The battle of the Sand Cup, as I call it. Newcastle versus City.
Okay.
But I also wonder, now that Madrid is finished with La Liga, they have nothing to play for in La Liga. They've won it.
Yeah.
They have every opportunity to just kind of like keep a vibe going without wearing anybody out leading into the final, while Liverpool, their opponent, is going to be trying to chase City all this time.
Yeah, this definitely favors Madrid. I was rooting for Madrid. When I figured out that City really wasn't going to impact them too much if they advance, because the final takes place after the league is over, then I started rooting for Madrid, but I didn't think about how Madrid could now just rest, basically.
And I'm very confused, because today, Andy, the hardcore Liverpool fan, is wearing a Madrid jersey.
Right.
And I'm wondering what is
irony.
Going on with you. Why are you doing this?
Praise to Madrid. Hala Madrid. What a win that was.
Are you sandbagging?
No.
Are you applying some school of Bob Sturm Jedi mind trick?
Look, we used to have our ancient rivals, Everton, from day one, but they're not really rivals anymore. And then our modern, quote, modern rivals, United, have they really been rivals lately?
No.
So City's our new rival by default. You know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this was a great win for the team I was rooting for against Liverpool's rival.
If they beat you in the final, will you?
I will be mad.
Will you burn that jersey?
No. That Madrid. This has been a great run for Madrid. Kudos to them. It's going to be a great final.
I'm going to go back to a moment on the show several weeks ago where we sat down, I think, at the quarterfinal stage and looked at all the teams remaining. Mm-hmm. Did anybody pick Madrid to win the final?
To win the final?
Yeah.
I'm sure some people would have picked Madrid.
Well, did you or I?
No, of course not.
Did Lars?
No. Not highly knowledgeable pundits like us. No, we didn't.
No, we were way too smart for that. Unbelievable. I hope everybody got an opportunity to go back and witness and see and enjoy and absorb the moments, because that will go down, without question, as one of the greatest moments in this sport's history. Real Madrid coming back in 88 seconds to win a Champions League two-legged tie over Manchester City to make the final.
Arguably the top club team in the world.
Yeah, for sure. Unbelievable. A la Madrid, for sure. All right, when we come back, let's catch up on what happened today in the Premier League next on The Kick Around. Welcome back to The Kick Around, brought to you by Soccer 90. And their wonderful website, soccer90.com. Speaking of those guys, Andy, that makes me think of kits, kit talk.
Yep.
During the dribble, I want to bring up the leak that happened this week of Nike's supposed American home and away jerseys.
I haven't seen those. No?
I got to talk about that. Yeah, we'll do that a little bit later here in the show. All right. Now we need to catch up with what happened today in the Premier League. We're going to save Chelsea for the next segment because I think there's a lot more to talk about. They announced an ownership winning bid, the Pulisic thing, the result of that game today. We'll talk about they ended up tying Wolves 2-2. But I also want to take a quick moment to ask you a question, Andy. When NBC sticks their Premier League crew on the actual location of the Kentucky Derby. Mm-hmm. Is that a smart and clever use of broadcasting resources because it's all the same, you know, behind the scenes crew and stuff,
right.
Or B, is that the most ridiculously silly and frustrating thing to do as a soccer fan in a critical end of season weekend?
They're not taking care of us, the P1s that watch that, right, for the soccer content. Of
and
course,
making
it's cross promotion.
Them dress, do the whole Kentucky Derby cosplay,
right,
is so annoying.
They did it during the Super Bowl. Remember, they broadcast. You know, so this is you spend billions of dollars.
And I guess I guess you got to save some money somewhere, right? Yeah. How about we take all the production crew and just stick them all in Lexington?
What I don't like
Lexington
is, like, they're having to talk louder. There's people around. They're not really focused.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Because they're certainly not paying attention to the games when they're not on screen, right? They're out drinking mint juleps and stuff.
No, they're not.
Oh, I bet they are.
Look at them right now. They're not drinking mint
juleps. They were going to have the owners of Liverpool, by the way.
Stats are so stupid.
During the game. But
we'll so stupid. All right, let's start off with the action today.
Yeah, let's.
I woke up, I was all excited, turned on my TV at 6:30, no game.
No, because they
were. But there is currently now a game going on, which is Liverpool and Tottenham, which is at halftime.
Yes. So this is one of four games left for Liverpool. Man City also has four games left. This is arguably the toughest one for
Liverpool. Yeah.
Right? At home against Spurs. So
and probably the toughest for Tottenham, too.
At Newcastle? Well, I don't know. They play at who?
I'm blinking. Can you think?
Sorry, you said Spurs.
Tottenham, yes.
Yeah, I meant you said City tomorrow. Yeah, right. The toughest for Spurs also.
Yes.
Correct. In their battle with Arsenal.
The Fruitcake Cup.
Yes, right. And so if Liverpool drops points here, it's going to be really hard for them then to make up ground if City does what they need to do. Obviously, if City wins out, Liverpool can't catch up, but now that affords City the opportunity to draw somewhere, and they have that game against Hammers that might get complicated for them, but then they could draw. So
I asked and tried to find out why the schedule was unusual this weekend. Somebody suggested to me that it was because of all the championship games that were played at 6:30 this morning.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they don't schedule Premier League games for due deference there because those could come down and decide. I mean, some seasons they decide who goes up, who goes down, who goes to the playoffs. This season, they were pretty much decided.
All right. So the other games today that happened, Watford is now officially relegated. The Luton Town fans rejoice. That is their biggest rival. Dan Crook is dancing on a grave. They lost today to Crystal Palace 1-0. Roy Hodgson losing to his old Crystal Palace team the season after he leaves that gig. That was weird. Did you hear that he's suffering from shingles?
No.
Yeah, he's got shingles, I think, on his face. So he showed up at a Watford game wearing these giant sunglasses, and he wore them the entire game, and everybody's like, what is Roy doing? It's because he has shingles. And if you've ever had shingles or know anybody that has shingles, especially if they're on your face,
painful, right?
That is very, very painful.
Yeah,
so
right,
Watford is down. They will play in the championship next week. Or next season, excuse
next
me, not
week.
Next week.
No. Let them finish out.
Let them finish the season, Peter.
Okay.
And Crystal Palace has to be the most surprising story of the season. I think we all thought they were going to get relegated Vieira as the manager, but boy, they have turned into a really nice. Yeah, they're in 10th. Brentford got a 3-0 win over Southampton.
I think that's the story more than anything. It's like the way Brentford has been able to finish where they're going to finish, right in the middle of the pack.
So Christian Eriksen signs at the end of January, right at the end of the window, plays his first game on February 26. Prior to that, their average points per game they collected were 0.44. Since his inclusion into the team, it's now almost 2 full points per game. Check that out.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
They're going to try to keep them. I don't know if they're going to be able to.
In the last 10 games, they have the fourth best form in the Premier League, and Southampton has the third worst.
Wow.
So Southampton, another, boy, that's a team that is, as they say, is the cliche, on the beach.
Yeah.
Drinking Mai Tais and wearing Speedos to the game.
But their under-18s are in the Premier League under-18 final.
Okay. All right.
I mean, they have a great academy is what I'm saying.
They do. Yeah, they very much do. All right, Burnley lose their first game under their new manager, Jackson, today, 3-1 to Aston Villa. Andy, is Aston Villa's end of the season a disappointment?
because of how Stevie Gerrard has managed them? I mean, from
They signed Coutinho, and everything was going on the up. They were looking amazing. They beat Manchester United.
Yeah, part of it
is.
But
then they went on that weird little losing streak.
Yeah, I think they are who they are. I mean, they've been inconsistent, but
right.
They've had some good results.
Okay. I just wondered if you thought that was disappointing where they ended up.
No.
And so Burnley now, that, as I said, is their first loss, and that puts them in the weird position back down in the relegation situation, because while they're ahead of Leeds on goal differential, they actually now are two games ahead. Leeds has a game in hand, and Everton has two games in hand. And I will update the chart, the running chart for both the Fruitcake Cup and the race for relegation Sunday night after all the games take place.
We'll talk about Leeds then.
Yeah. We should do that. And if you watched, Manchester United literally went out. You could have thrown out 11 wet dish rags on the field, and they would have played better than they did today. Brighton beat Manchester United 4-0. And let me quantify how bad this is. Brighton had not won at home this calendar year. They had only won at home 3 games at all this season. And in the game, the goals were scored, 2 of them, Cucurella and Cancedo scored their first goals of the season, and Pascal Gross scored twice in 90 seconds, had not yet scored this season.
Not good.
And it probably could have been 7-8-9 nothing.
Right. Yeah, Manchester United, not good. You almost think, man, should they roll the under-23s out there next week, right? Give those guys an opportunity. This will be the worst season point-wise that United has had in the Premier League.
I have a feeling.
In the Premier League era.
One of the things that I didn't have time to do that I want to go back and look if United lost more games by 2 or 3 or 4 goals in a season than ever before. This is going to be one of those seasons where we go back and look. This was a record setting of bad for a club.
Yeah.
Especially just in the modern era. I'm sure you could go back into the 60s, 50s, whatever, and find some other things. But. It is really weird, and United now officially is out of the Fruitcake Cup. They're closer in danger to not qualifying for any of the three European competitions.
Well, how do you feel about the Conference League? Do you like this?
No. Who wants to go to Iceland? And
because you will certainly win it. United will win that if they're in it.
Okay.
And then you don't have to worry about the Europa League next season. You don't even have to worry about that.
Why?
About finishing top six. Because they would automatically qualify for Europa League.
Oh, that's because that's our big... Okay. Look at Andy with the funny, the jokes. He's got all the jokes today.
Won't even have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's a bad... I have no idea what Ten Hag is going to do next season, and the number of players they claim they're going to buy or whatever just continues to fluctuate somewhere between 1 and 18.
Well, not getting in Champions League is going to hurt their transfer window, that's for sure. So.
It very much is. And by the way, if you've been paying attention, over in the Championship, we got some scenes going on. Fulham did officially get promoted.
Mm-hmm.
Bournemouth,
yes,
and the Cherries ended up securing theirs. Mm-hmm. So now it's officially Huddersfield will play Luton Town, Dan Crook's Luton Town,
who's never
been a Premier League team. This is a team that was down in the non-leagues not that long ago and have worked their way all the way up. And then Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United will also play a home and away in the Championship playoffs. Some scenes over there. Fulham, by the way, have scored 106 goals. Mitrovic scored 40-something goals this season.
They're
after
just a yo-yo club.
Yeah, it's a really weird situation.
Norwich comes down, Fulham goes up.
So does Watford. Bournemouth goes up. So lots of that going on. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, let's talk about Chelsea next on the Kick Around.
Yahooty!
Welcome back to the Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on The Ticket. By the end of the show, I will describe to you what has to be the most insane soccer goal I've ever seen. And I just happened to stumble across it by accident Thursday night. And that'll happen during The Dribble. I should take a minute to talk about what's happening tomorrow morning in games coming up in the Premier League. Arsenal is hosting Leeds, Andy.
Yes.
Leicester is hosting Everton. Norwich is hosting West Ham United. And City and Newcastle will do the Sand Cup, as I like to call it.
And all games with big implications.
Norwich, West Ham really isn't.
Yeah, West Ham. I mean, they want to get a Europa spot, not the seventh place spot.
Okay.
Right? They want to overtake United.
Yeah.
That's pretty significant.
Okay.
Between playing in Europa and playing in that, what is it called again?
The European Conference League.
Right. Who's in the final? Quick. See, it's Roma and?
Roma and Rangers?
Rangers lost. Europe.
Yeah.
No, Rangers is playing Eintracht in the Europa League final.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I'm getting all those confused. Yeah. It's so confusing.
Anyway, to me, it's a definite step down, but whatever.
You're such a Euro snob.
No, I'm just saying Europa League is pretty prestigious. I think you'd want to get in that, and if you're the Hammers, that's what you're gunning for.
Well, the Arsenal-Leeds game, I think, is of the highest interest because of the implications for both the Fruitcake Cup, which is the fourth-place position that nobody seems to want. Somebody's going to get it, but they don't seem to want it. Mm-hmm. By the way, we can officially now remove Manchester United from the Fruitcake Cup competition. Yep. They are not going to get fourth.
They don't have to worry about that anymore.
And Leeds, obviously, is battling to stave off relegation.
So
Jesse Marsh, I told you,
I
Jesse,
know.
Don't take that.
It was looking promising when Everton and Burnley were dropping points left and right. We're like, Leeds is safe. Leeds is safe.
Then they ran into a bit of a schedule problem.
They did, and then Everton beat Chelsea, and then Burnley went on a run, and now it looks like Leeds is really the team in most trouble, right? Don't you think?
I don't know. Looking at the table, I mean, losing today against Aston Villa didn't help Burnley's case.
No, but
and then they've got two road games before having to play Newcastle.
But Leeds has a brutal schedule and a terrible goal difference.
True. Yes, I agree.
So overcome
that. But they have Jesse Marsh, the American coach.
All right, there you go.
And Everton is just Everton, and they've got Frank Lampard, who has
He's not wrong.
Have you steeled yourself for relegation and getting an ESPN Plus account for next year?
I already have one, first off, but I am prepared for anything at this point. I could see them barely dodging. I think my current favorite scenario with our former board op is Burnley and Everton both barely survive, and Leeds ends up taking the
axe. So you want Jesse Marsh to go down?
Great. In this case, yes. If it saves my club, yes. I will throw anybody overboard.
No, you'd rather have Burnley be saved than them.
I don't know any Leeds fans. I know we have one Leeds fan that listens to the show, but he is not my personal friend like Josh is.
Okay.
Well, I said a few minutes ago that we could officially remove Manchester United from the Fruitcake Cup run-in chart because they officially, with their 4-0 loss at Brighton today, are officially never going to get fourth place. But you know what I can do? I can add Chelsea. I can't believe I'm saying this. But if Arsenal win tomorrow, and even if Spurs was to win today, Arsenal would be within a point of Chelsea for third place.
Yes.
And Spurs even would be within shouting distance of Chelsea.
There is a small chance that Chelsea ends up fifth.
Let me read something to you.
Ain't going to happen, guys.
Yes, but there's a small chance.
There's our Chelsea fan. Listen to this.
Yeah.
Since the beginning of April, Chelsea has played 7 games. How many of those 7 do you think they won?
Oh, man. In all competition?
No, just in the Premier League.
3?
Dose,
wow.
2. The 6-0 win over Southampton and the 1-0 win over West Ham. In that, the rest of the games, they lost 4-1 to Brentford, the 4-2 loss against Arsenal, the 1-1 draw against Manchester United, they got to feel really stupid about now, the 1-0 loss to Everton, and today's shocking 2-2 draw against Wolves at Stamford Bridge. With their new owner in the stands, Todd Boehly, the owner of the Dodgers, after going up 2-0 in the what appeared to be rather easy way of going about it, and then melted, absolutely melted in the last 10 minutes of the game. By the way, Connor Cody, who scored the tying goal in the 97th minute, has scored in 268 games. 4 Wolves have only scored 5 times. That was his 5th goal in 268 games for Wolves.
By the way, Lukaku scored his first goals of 2022.
Yes.
Did you know?
And Christian Pulisic also scored today. Or did no, also started today. He did not score.
Yeah, 90 minutes, had the assist for the second goal.
So have you been paying attention to the drama around Christian and his dad in social media?
Dad tweeting or whatever, posting. So I think it was Instagram.
Yeah, on Twitter, after just getting 22 minutes at the 1-0 loss against Everton, Mark Pulisic, his dad, tweeted, "The sad thing is he loves the club, teammates, and lid. Mm-hmm. He puts his heart and soul into being a pro. Onwards and upward, my boy. Big 6 months ahead."
Yeah.
Nah, nah, nah.
Of course, the British media went to Tuchel and like, "Hey, what do you think of this?" The dad takes the post down. Tuchel, he was fine with it. And he's like, "Yeah, it's okay. It's family. You know, what do you expect?"
Tuchel's had a lot of problems with players and social media this season.
Lukaku being number one. So new owner in Chelsea, what do you think? You know, I think it's who I predicted, right? I said I ultimately it was going to be the Dodgers owner that was going to win out.
He's one of a lot of people in this mix.
Three major ones, but he's really leading the charge, Todd Boehly.
So he essentially pays 1.7 billion pounds for the club, but then also makes a promising investment of another whatever billions of dollars that adds up to $4.2 billion that they will invest into the club in terms of Stamford Bridge, the women's team, the youth teams, infrastructure stuff.
$3 billion for the team and then $1.2 billion for all that stuff.
So, oh, I thought it was less than $2 billion for the team.
No, and $3.
Maybe I've got my numbers backwards.
Yeah, it's dollars.
Oh, in American dollars.
Yeah, American dollars. Yeah.
Okay, the conversion you've
so
done.
So where do you think
y'all know Andy's got a portfolio, so he knows
where do you
stuff.
Think he falls among the wealthiest football club owners in the world, or this group, Todd Boehly leading the charge, but his little group. And what place do you think they fall?
That there's somebody in as a part of this that is like incredibly wealthy. So I'm going to say top five.
There's six.
Really?
Yeah, there's six. No, but listen to this. Number one is the Newcastle Group, the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund.
Yeah, the state of Saudi Arabia.
$400 billion.
Right, okay.
Qatar Investment Authority owns PSG. They're at $275 billion. Third place is the guy that owns Man City, the Sheik, at only $26 billion.
I believe that's pronounced Sheikh.
Sheikh, okay. $26 billion. Sheikh Mansour. And then the Red Bull people at fourth, $19 billion. Fifth is Juventus. The one guy, Andrea Agnelli. And then these guys, six. So when it comes to being a wealthy group, I mean, they got more money than Arsenal and Inter Milan and
so if you,
Liverpool.
If you watched the game today, there was an entertaining moment. Now, I don't know anything about Todd Boehly. I don't know what his background or relationship with the sport of soccer is. I don't know if he knows anything about it or he is a lifelong fan. But there's a moment early in the game where Chelsea scores a goal and it goes to VAR and then gets overturned on a very confusing set of almost two different offside calls in the same sequence. And it gets extended for a long time. Yeah. Now, if you remember, the problem with VAR is in the stadium, the experience is extremely confusing.
Yeah, because they're not showing what we're seeing on TV.
And there's a camera shot of Todd Boehly and his friends sitting up in the seats when they finally announce that the goal has decided that it is not a goal due to offside. And he kind of throws his arms up in the air, and you could just see the utter look of confusion on his face. What just happened? Like, and I can't tell if he's confused because they're not communicating well in the stadium, or he doesn't even know what VAR is.
Yeah. He must know what VAR is. VAR.
VAR, 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 VAR.
We haven't heard the VAR alarm in a while. Hello, VAR alarm.
VAR, 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 VAR.
But then, a few minutes later, VAR comes to the rescue. And it's all good.
VAR did come to the rescue. And then they had a shot of him after the comeback fight of Wolves to tie the game. And he didn't look too pleased then either.
The only thing he must be rooting for is to make sure they don't drop out of the top four, right? Because that's millions and millions of dollars.
I would assume so. But the idea that we – and you gave me guff when I tried to include Chelsea in this whole like conversation about what if Chelsea
– I did. I gave you the same amount of guff you gave me when I said, don't count Liverpool out. They're going to still fight for the top spot.
Are they?
Well, they're losing right now. They're not, so.
Oh, look at the score.
But this hurts Chelsea.
Tottenham has scored to make it 1-0 over Liverpool.
Yeah, no, I did. And I didn't foresee the whole Ukraine situation developing and ownership going away and all those problems probably certainly getting in the way of a smooth season or end of the season, right? I'm thinking that has something to do with their recent form of late.
Well, it
locker
is
locker room mentality.
It is a very, and what I'm interested in seeing is that the Chelsea fan base has been treated to a luxury lifestyle over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
You get what you want, and if you're not getting what you want, you change it, even if it was good very, very recently. Mm. They've run through managers at will, and I just have a feeling that this new management structure isn't going to run the club the same way, and Chelsea fans are going to have to reset their expectations.
They're going to be a little bit more Arsenal. And a little less Man City.
Yeah.
And
I'm not saying they're going to go full Arsenal.
Yeah.
But there's now billions of dollars invested that they've got to figure out how to turn that into something that makes sense financially.
Right, yeah.
And spending $285
right.
million dollars in one window isn't the way of
there
doing
has
it
to
anymore.
Be a return on investment, unlike Sheikh Mansour, who owns Man City, who doesn't really care.
Right.
He just wants trophies.
Yes.
Especially that Champions
League. And by the way, before we go, did you see the insane rumor that is running around that Pep and City are strongly considering signing Paul Pogba in this offseason?
Wow.
Yes.
Hope so.
Let's do it.
Yes.
So
why not?
I had to stop it. Now, remember, Pogba is out of contract. They can get him for a free. Yeah. Anybody can get him. PSG, Real, anybody who wants Paul at the end of the season can have him for nothing other than the, like, literally $300,000 he makes a week.
Right. His salary
is epic. But City, and this has been confirmed that, you know, Pep thinks that they can use him in a deep-lying role and try to get out of him what France gets out of him. And my initial reaction is, yeah, good luck with all that. But then I started thinking about it. It's Pep. Mm-hmm. It's all that other top-quality, world-class soccering that's going on. The world isn't on Paul's shoulders. Mm-hmm. He can just show up and do his thing, and he's going to want to show up, right?
And there are locker room – there's locker room police.
Leadership.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe Pep could get that Paul Pogba performance on a regular that
maybe.
United was never able to do.
Pogba's a little older too, though. You got to keep.
He's 29.
29. Okay.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
That's a pretty. I couldn't believe it when I saw that. Yeah. When I saw that earlier.
Him and Haaland, the new acquisitions for City. Nice.
Yes. Now the other thing about that is PSG's making a really considered strong run to try to keep Mbappe. Like the numbers they're talking about paying him to stay.
Yeah.
That would fundamentally change the Haaland race, because if they can't get Mbappe, they're going to turn their focus back to getting Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is supposed to be on the precipice of signing
with
City. Well, I got to have two.
Yeah. Like Mbappe and Benzema makes more sense because Mbappe plays wider. Haaland plays right there when Benzema plays.
At this
plays.
Point, I believe in Carlos Ancelotti.
Yeah.
I think he can make anything
That's
work.
Right. Good point.
He can make anything work. So I will be updating the Fruitcake Cup and relegation run-in chart later tomorrow. And Manchester United is gone off the chart and Chelsea will be introduced. I can't believe I'm saying that. All right. That's enough Premier League talk for the day. When I and Andy come back, I want to have a conversation. Seattle, the best MLS club ever, next on The Kick Around. In just a few minutes, the good Tyler Kern will join us to talk about pitch invasions gone galore over in Germany.
What's going on over there?
And we also have a Kick Around show announcement coming up with Mr. Kern here in just a little bit. Andy is air celebrating because without looking, I can tell Liverpool has now tied the game up as Tottenham and Liverpool are playing at Anfield right now, 1-1. All right. I want to take a few minutes to talk about something that also happened this week. So in my mind, two really monumental moments of this sport took place. This week, midweek, first being the Real Madrid comeback over City in the Champions League. But over here, I think some of you P1s know this or pay attention or care. I think most of you either don't care or don't even know about it. But we have a Champions League here in this Northern American hemisphere. Mm-hmm. It's the CONCACAF Champions League. And just like over in Europe and other places, it's the collection of teams from the best teams from each of the leagues. It's been going on for quite a while now.
Yes.
And on, was it Thursday or Wednesday?
Wednesday
night,
yep.
Up in Seattle at the second leg It happened. It finally happened. A Major League Soccer team won the CONCACAF Champions League. And by the way, I just want to point out, Seattle did it in front of a crowd of 68,000 people,
right,
which was a total sellout of that stadium. And just to put that into perspective, the average attendance of an NFL football game for the last 10 years is 67,000 people.
Also, to put
not
that,
Seattle, yeah, all NFL. Yeah.
Also, to put that in perspective, it was a CONCACAF Champions League attendance record.
Yes.
Because these games get played in Mexico and Costa, you know, other Mexico has stadiums that big, and still the record was set in Seattle.
Here's the reason why I wanted to talk about this. Major League Soccer has now been around for essentially, what, 26, 27 years. Seattle, as part of that league, didn't join until 2009. But what I think a lot of people either forget or didn't know is that the Sounders have been around way longer than that. They were an NASL franchise. They've been around in some form or fashion since the 60s. Mm-hmm. Portland is the same thing. The culture of the sport in Seattle is well established at the professional level. And despite not being one of the original 10, and in fact not even joining the league until 2009, I think the argument is that they are in fact the best club in the league's history. 4 U.S. Open Cup titles, 2 MLS Cup titles, although that seems low. Like in my head, I thought they had won at least 4 MLS Cups. And now a Champions League trophy.
They've gotten to, I think they've played in 4 MLS Cups and won 2 of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can argue this for sure. You can also argue that the Galaxy, over the span of the, 25 years, has had the most success. 9 MLS Cup appearances, 5 trophies, plus some Open Cups, blah, blah, blah.
Since they joined in 2009, Seattle has never not made the MLS playoffs, and the LA Galaxy have missed the playoffs multiple times.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're talking the best team in the history of the league, and then United would be the other one because they had an early run. But yes, definitely over the last 2 decades, right?
Seattle's worst finish in the Western Conference is 4th. Their worst in the total table since 2009 is 7th. Single table. Unbelievable.
It could be worse this year.
And they have, and they continue to have amazing attendances.
Yep.
They're well over 30,000 a game in an NFL stadium on a fake turf field.
Right. If you take all those intangibles and throw it all in the mixer, you could say it's been kind of the top brand for MLS since they came to the league.
And just to also put into perspective, while they've spent a lot of money, they haven't blown the doors off in the way that Toronto or L.A. have done in the past. You know, Nicholas Ladero was a huge addition to this team and really been the engine. They signed him for $6 million. Rui Diaz, who I think I'm correct in saying at the time was like the leading scorer in Liga MX when they brought him over, they got him for $7 million, which is essentially what Dallas just paid for Alan Velasco from Argentina.
Yeah.
The market's changed.
Yeah, they're not paying Toronto and New York money and Galaxy money for some of these guys.
They got Rusnik from Real Salt Lake for free.
Yeah. So this all goes to their front office, their infrastructure, their scouting department, and Garth Lagerwey. Right,
which is really weird to say because you and I have a personal history with Garth dating back to his days when he was a backup keeper for the Burn.
Yeah, a lot of us here in Dallas do.
And we all know, there are like 2 Garths that we know. This guy that is now considered the greatest general manager in Major League Soccer history.
Yeah.
And then the Garth Lagerwey we know who used to cornrow his hair and get really drunk all the time.
Yeah, backup keeper.
Yes.
Fun guy, good dude.
Good keeper, by the way.
Good keeper.
He had a couple of really amazing performances for the Burn when he had to fill in for Dodd back in the day.
Good dude.
Great dude.
Down to earth. Still as GM, he's very down to earth. But smart. Incredibly, incredibly smart. And really astute in what you need to look for when you get a player. Reminds me a lot, not because I'm Liverpool and all that, but Liverpool looks at more than just what the player does on the field and metrics and all that. There's a little bit of off the field grading of certain acquisitions. Garth is very much into that, and Garth likes to speak to the player and like have a one-on-one with him before he decides to sign him.
So for people who don't pay attention, the Champions League here in CONCACAF is not set up to favor Major League Soccer teams because they end up joining it at a point in the season when MLS teams are essentially just starting, and they have to travel to crazy places all over, you know, the Caribbean and Central America, and they've just barely gotten together, and it's a real challenge, and it's historically been very easy for MLS teams just to flame out very early in the tournament.
They have to balance league play with that.
And a lot of them end up sacrificing the first half of their Major League Soccer season. The Burn is a great example. I mean, the Burn, FC Dallas.
Right.
There was a famous season 2017 when Oscar and the club made a decision to play a lot of games in the preseason, go very, very hard, and they ended up flaming out, not only just in the Champions League, but they flamed out in Major League Soccer and didn't even make the playoffs that season because they had essentially burned their candle at the beginning for Champions League.
Yeah, and we've had MLS teams reach the finals before.
Atlanta, Toronto.
Yeah, Salt Lake with Garth as the GM. And I think some of them even won the first leg in Mexico before they ended up farting it away when they hosted the second leg at home. The thing about the Seattle team is there's nobody that can argue that this was a fluke championship for them. They were the deserving team in this Champions League series. They were the best team to play in the Champions League this year. And kudos to them then for doing it. And you know, having heard from some teams that played them and other like media from around the CONCACAF area that were at some of these games, I had to be at some of these games, the feedback was, man, this is a good, legit team. This is as good a team as you get in CONCACAF.
And the proof in the pudding is, so first off, they go down 2-0 in the first leg in at Pumas, and they come back. They get two penalty kicks to tie it 2-2. They go to Seattle, and within less than the first 30 minutes, they lose not one but two critical starters. Their left back, who played in the African Cup of Nations, Nuhu, and their starting holding mid, Yapalo,
who has been brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yes.
By the way, he tore his ACL and is out for the rest of the season. And inserted Kellen Rowe, who is like an MLS journeyman, who's really not even a left back to begin with, naturally. And then for Yapalo, they put in a 16-year-old academy product, Vargas, who I was so impressed by. He didn't play a great game, but man, he did what he needed to do. 16 years old in a Champions League game. That is unbelievable.
And you know where the credit to their coach, because he played this kid through the campaign.
Yeah.
And key moments, you know, games that where they might have been up, but maybe only up by a goal, he gave him minutes. So, but when he stepped into this final, it was like, yeah, I played in this. And
we should take a minute just to talk about Brian Smetzer because...
The coach,
yeah. What an interesting guy who's been a part of the Sounder organization forever. He was a player both on the NASL team and also their indoor team because there was an indoor version of the Sounders after the NSAL folded.
He is a Seattle and Seattle Sounder as it gets.
He is, and he's one of these guys that is... He looks more like your dad and acts more like your dad than he does a professional athletic team coach.
College professor.
Yeah.
Right.
Super low-key, chill. He never gets super... In fact, some of the emotions he displayed in the course of the waning minutes of them being very clearly they were going to win this game was about the most emotion I'd ever seen out of Brian Smetzer.
Yeah.
It was really fun to see. And I know there are Dallas fans and MLS fans listening or Portland fans that are listening to the podcast version of the show that hate Seattle. And I know there's a whole thing about Seattle thinking they invented soccer.
I know.
But I'm just saying, as a day one fan of Major League Soccer, my deepest respect to the Seattle Sounders for what they accomplished on Wednesday night.
One more question for you, because the goalkeeping was a big part of this run they've had in this Champions League, but also in MLS. Stephen Fry.
Yep.
Does he deserve a look with the national team? I mean, there's a lot of talk about that. That's why I bring it up. It's not me just thinking about
it. No, I've seen that. I don't think Fry possesses the foot skill that Greg is looking for. He's also a little bit older, too. He's 36,
I think. In the goalkeeper position, you know that's okay.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, Zach Steffen or Matt Turner is, by the time Cutter rolls around, are going to be in great situations.
Yeah. Berhalter is the kind of guy that he doesn't want to jack around with things. And he's got the thing in place and he's not going to mess with it. But it's just an interesting question, I think.
No,
he's done so well.
I think it is an interesting question. He has been fantastic. He didn't have to really oddly do that much. Pumas was...
Not in this final, but...
Other times, just overall for Seattle, he's been fantastic.
He was MVP of the Champions League this year.
Oh, was he really?
Yes, they gave him the MVP.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, so kudos to the Seattle Sounders winning the CONCACAF Champions League, the first major league soccer team to do that. And for their victory, they will now become the first MLS team to participate in the World Club Cup. Could you, Andy, imagine a World Club Cup final featuring Liverpool versus the Seattle Sounders?
Wow. Now, Seattle will likely have to play Liverpool or Real Madrid in the semis.
Oh.
Get past one of those before then they play, you know.
Is there any chance they even get that far?
To the final? Sure, anything can happen.
In a cup tournament?
They might have to play Flamengo in the semis.
Man, you're just going to have all your allegiances.
I know. I guess Seattle because of MLS. You're right.
Right. Yeah, for sure. All right. When we come back, we're going to dial up the good Tyler Kern to talk about what's going on with all this pitch invasion in Germany next on the Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around, brought to you by Soccer 90 and Soccer90.com. Liverpool and Tottenham are tied at one apiece. Luis Diaz has knotted the game up, and maybe next week. Well, I won't be here next week. Sometime I want to have a conversation of the phenomena of Luis Diaz and how unusual.
Next week is perfect because next week is all Liverpool talk on the Kick Around.
All right. Well, you can do that with the person now joining us via the miracle of the internet, the great Tyler Kern, our Bundesliga correspondent. Tyler, hello, my friend.
Hello. Hello, gentlemen. Yeah, we can talk some Bundesliga, Andy.
Oh, we will.
No, he just wants to. He's hoping he can. So let me just get this out of the way. The show announcement is next week I'm out of town, and Tyler's going to be playing the part of Peter. And the following week, Andy has U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame induction stuff, minus Hope Solo, and which has saved everybody a little bit of time, I suppose. And so Tyler, in 2 weeks, will be playing the part of Andy. And we'll be filling in then. So, Tyler, I have a feeling that before the show next week, Andy will meet you out in the hallway, push you up against the wall with his hand across your throat and say, it's all Liverpool for six segments.
Good news is I have a Manchester United shirt, so I can wear that to play the part of Peter. And then I have a Liverpool shirt, so then I can come in and play the part of Andy. So I'm
perfect.
Fully prepared. Yeah, I'm fully prepared for any and all scenarios. I will be... The Kick Around Chameleon.
Man, we've vetted this so well, Peter.
He's given himself a show nickname, the Kick Around Chameleon. I like it. All right. I dig it. I like it. All right, Tyler, we do need to talk about Bundesliga because there's some craziness going on. There was, I don't know if you saw the thread that Lars Sivertsen told everybody to watch. It was Archie Rintut, who is the Guardian's Bundesliga correspondent. He was at Cologne today and telling the story of Cologne, which for the first time I think ever is going to now play in the Europe. They qualified for the Conference League, and the scenes and the madness and the significance of just how insane it is in that community. They had like 200,000 ticket requests for this game today against Wolfsburg. It's crazy.
Yeah, and look, like this is what's so great about the Bundesliga, right? Is that the fans are such a huge part of the teams and the leagues, and the team is such an extension of the community that you really get that sense, mainly because of that kind of partial team ownership that fans feel in the Bundesliga that might not necessarily be the case in other leagues, and that's part of what's so attractive about this league. Now, obviously, like the Bayern Munich winning every season thing is not so great, right? There's a downside there, but that's part of what's so attractive and fun about the Bundesliga, right? And you have a team like Union Berlin who had a massive win today as well, and so you know those sorts of things are what I think fuels passion for the league for a lot of us that are Bundesliga fans, while acknowledging that there's no possible way that you can spin 10 consecutive titles for Bayern Munich being a positive thing, right? There are still things to love about this league.
Now, the crazy thing about the fans storming the field today is not so much that they, I mean, yes, they were super excited that they were going to be in one of the European tournaments, probably the Conference League, but maybe Europa. But they were in Europa League 3 years ago. It's not like they've had a drought for a long time, right?
Which team were you talking about?
Köln.
No, they've never played in Europe before.
They haven't?
That's what Archie Rintut said today, but maybe I'm wrong about it. Maybe I misunderstood what he said.
Yeah, I need to go look. I don't have a good sense of the Cologne history, but I mean it's a big deal for some of these clubs. And look, you can have a discussion about whether or not Europa Conference League is a worthwhile thing and who really cares. But at the end of the day, it gets teams like that into a tournament in Europe, and you get to have some of those midweek games, and that's big for fan bases, right? And so. Regardless of what your team's past history might be, like, playing in Europe is still a big deal. And if you can kind of get in and play, you know, some of the teams like Roma and some of the other teams that played in that tournament this year, like, that's a fun deal.
All right. I want to ask a question because I want to make sure that I'm not just stating this completely wrong, but I'm looking at the table and I'm trying to figure out, because Cologne, at least in this particular table, is in seventh, but they're not listed as a European qualifier. They show the four for Champions League, the one for Europa League, and the one for... So what happened? What happened to the table here? Maybe this table hasn't been updated that I'm looking at.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm also a little
they're in seventh. Seventh,
right?
Is,
this says seventh, but this says they have four Champions League spots, one Europa League spot, and one. Conference League spot, and I'm wondering if this is one of those deals where somebody has won something, so an extra slot is pushed down or something. Mm-hmm. That's what I don't know. Do you know? You're our Bundesliga correspondent, Tyler. You're
always
supposed to
go
know
to
this.
Wiki. When in doubt, just look at the table on Wiki. There's nothing that updates stuff faster than Wiki.
Okay.
While I just sing the praises of the Europa Conference League, I am also confused about how many tournaments there are and who gets in where. That's also still a mystery to me. But we'll have to see exactly how that shakes out for Bundesliga clubs. I'm just surprised Andy is participating in this conversation.
Yeah, no,
what's
look,
going on.
It's I've been amazed, and this is another question I had for you because, as you know,
don't ask him who is at the top of the table.
Eintracht. I know that's sealed. Mm-hmm. That we last week discussed that Bayern won it for like the 23rd consecutive season. Eintracht. Advanced to the final of the Europa League. And they also had what seemed to be a semi-organized and allowed pitch invasion, right, when they advanced. And now we saw what happened today with Köln. So we don't have to worry about what's happening in Germany with pitch invasions, right? This is not a new trend. I mean, this is controlled and the authorities are behind all this. Is this normal?
You know, I don't think it's super normal, but I'm not. I guess I was watching that and wasn't terribly concerned by it, right? And so I'm not.
Well,
I'm not
as a
terribly,
match commissioner, wearing my match commissioner hat, I'm a little bit freaked out about this development. Because if this becomes the norm, you know, like now we're gonna have to be worried about these things.
To me, it's less concerning than the fact that a one-off fan can run out during the game, you know, and get just remarkably close to players, you know what I mean? Like, that to me is still just absolutely wild. Like, the pitch invasion after, you know, a major tournament win and a celebration and that sort of thing, that to me looks like controlled chaos of some level, but the fan that just randomly runs on the field during a game, I'm amazed that something worse hasn't happened already, right? Just that one-off person. Like, I remember, were either of you at the Cotton Bowl game between Roma and Real Madrid?
Yeah.
Like, probably summer of 2014?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, fans kept running over
like
to the bench area to try
ones,
to take to try to take pictures with Cristiano Ronaldo, and you're like, there's no way that this is a good situation, right?
It was I remember that. It was hot and it was gross and he didn't play and all anybody wanted to do was see Ronaldo and he was just kind of standing over by himself. Yeah. That was a weird
too
day.
Many people were there just to see Ronaldo and not appreciating the fact that Francisco Totti and Luka Modric were playing on the field in front of them. But, you know, that's fine. Superstars draw.
Okay, so in terms of, you know, we're close to wrapping up the Bundesliga season. Obviously, as we've talked about, Bayern has won it. Is there one particular surprise storyline? Freiburg ending up in fourth, Union Berlin nabbing a European spot. Like, what is your favorite story of the 21-22 Bundesliga season?
Yeah, I kind of think it has to be Union Berlin, right? Because I...
Homer.
Homer.
Isn't that your favorite team?
I mean, they were the team that I suggested that the good P1 follow last season. And my prediction last season did not really work out all that well, but it has come to fruition this season. So I was just early on the bandwagon. So any P1 that took my advice last year gets to be like the soccer hipster that says, I was an Union fan before they were in Europe, right?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, before they were cool. But Union Berlin beat Freiburg 4-1 today, which kind of puts Freiburg's tenuous Champions League hopes a little bit, it becomes a little bit more dicey because RB Leipzig plays Augsburg and Ricardo Pepi tomorrow. And if RB Leipzig wins that game, because Augsburg's not very good, then Leipzig jumps Freiburg and Freiburg would fall down into a Europa League spot and Leipzig jumps up into one of those Champions League spots. And so that's a big deal. So that was a big result also, though, for Union to be able to kind of get up into one of those places and be in the top six. Look, that's an incredible performance for them this season, especially for a team that is more of the underdog in their own town, right? Hertha Berlin is the bigger club owned by the people with more money. Union is the team that the fans all pooled together and donated blood to be able to donate money for stadium renovations. Like, they are the small team that are kind of, being scrappy and getting up there into the top six.
All right, and speaking of Ricardo Pepi and Augsburg, since we like to pay attention to that, he's not started of late, not played a lot. He still hasn't scored for them, but they did get a big win in their last game, which now I think officially has sealed their place in the Bundesliga for next season. Because they're
on 30. Say that again, Peter.
Augsburg has essentially sealed their place with that last win to stay in the Bundesliga next season. Correct? With one game left.
I believe that's the case. Stuttgart plays tomorrow against Bayern.
Oh, they have two games left.
So I guess
they have two. No, I take that back. They have two games left. Stuttgart and them both have two games left, and they're 6 points ahead. So if Stuttgart was to win both, and Augsburg was to lose both, they're close enough on goal differential that that's squeaky bum time for
Augsburg. Needs one more point.
Yeah,
yeah, and Stuttgart playing Bayern Munich tomorrow. I know Bayern Munich's wrapped up the title, but you know, Bayern's B team could walk to a victory against Stuttgart pretty easily. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I hope it does, honestly, because I don't want Augsburg to get dragged into that. But yeah, that's kind of the situation. And that's right.
Because if you end up in third to bottom, you don't get relegated. You have to go do the playoff with the third place team from the second division. I forgot about
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Now that's Augsburg's so cool. Final game of the season is against Greuther Fürth, who is so far and away the worst team in the Bundesliga this season. A minus 53 goal differential for Greuther Fürth.
That's
so
pretty bad.
So Augsburg's final game of the season is against them. So even if they did somehow get drawn back into that kind of relegation battle, they do have a pretty favorable matchup in their final game of the season. So
minus 50.
I'm hopeful.
Minus 53 is actually worse than Norwich's minus 49. That is pretty bad. By the way, all right, I'm going to make the prediction now. Ricardo Pepi is going to score the goal for Augsburg that secures their place in the Bundesliga.
I love that. I love that.
That's my prediction.
I love that call.
Go put some money on it, Andy.
Does Ricardo Pepi stay at Augsburg next year?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like I said last week,
they're
going to
sell him at a discount now?
No, loan amount.
Yeah. I think a full offseason will be so beneficial. And we've talked about this in the past, but those January transfers are always difficult. And you factor in the fact that he was 18 at the time and had just finished his first kind of full season as a professional in Major League Soccer. I think maybe our expectations were unrealistic. And we've talked about the fact this is the first time he's really faced some opposition in his career. A hat trick in his first professional game in USL, succeeded very quickly in Major League Soccer. This being kind of an opportunity for him to grow and to learn. I think a full off season, and I believe Greg Berhalter said earlier this week that Pepi might not be called in for this June camp just to give him some time to get his head right, to get his body right, to take some time after the season just to recover a little bit. I think all of those things are good things, and just to measure our expectations a little bit, but then also give him a full off season with the team. team, let the team kind of figure out how to play with a guy like Ricardo Pepi. So they just really haven't had that kind of guy in the past. So I think all of those things will be positive for him.
All right, that is our Bundesliga expert correspondent, Tyler Kern, who will be co-hosting the show for the next 2 weeks starting next week. Tyler, yeah. Thank you, sir. Good luck
thank
sitting
you,
in one of these other chairs. We wish you the best, sir. Don't let the P1s hound you too much, okay?
Look, I am ready for
and don't,
anything.
Yeah, don't screw it up, all right? That's what I really should say to you. Don't mess this show up. All right, when we come back...
I will not let Andy go Liverpool all the time.
Yeah,
so, yeah, we're going to keep this thing on the rails.
We'll see.
Yeah, if you can keep him under three segments, you've won. All right, when
I'm
we come...
I'm going to bring a nice Cabernet for Andy just to keep him distracted.
Oh, no, no.
So, you know.
You're a smart lad. Smart lad. Thank you, Tyler.
Thank
when
you.
We come back, it's America's favorite soccer segment known as The Dribble, next on The Kick Around. Congratulations, you've made it to the final segment of this week's episode of The Kick Around. Figured I'd use my deep-voiced, sexy voice.
To go with the return.
To go with the return music, yes.
It's good radio right
sexy
there,
sexy soccer defense. Hey, Liverpool and Spurs ended up going hockey sticks 1-1.
They did. This does not help Liverpool's cause, does it, Peter?
Did
Liverpool was playing like doo-doo.
Did Klopp over-celebrate that
no,
tying
because,
goal?
No, because the point actually means a lot. It means that you can still count, like, you can still hope City loses a game and Liverpool
wins. They play
wins
Newcastle,
out. Yeah.
Who's been playing well.
And they play the Hammers.
Yeah.
There, I think. So there's still hope. Had they not scored that goal...
He fist pumped, I counted, 7 times, and it was the extreme kind of throwing your arm out of its socket kind of fist
so
pump.
So think about this season for Liverpool.
Do we have to?
Think about this. Hold on. On the one hand, they still could win the quadruple, right? They still have a chance.
They could also just end up with the League Cup.
They could also have the most phenomenal but yet most disappointing season in Premier League history.
Hey, Sam, guess which one I'm rooting for?
Right? They could have the best, most disappointing season ever.
It would be so Liverpoolian. Liverpudlian.
Like, these are the two extremes. Or, like, the greatest season ever.
Yeah, I don't like that one. I like the other one. Go back to the disappointing one.
Go back to the one where you're crushed that you won the League Cup.
Of course, if we just win the League Cup and it ends up like this, but Everton gets relegated, that will be a win. Now that you've mentioned it, Sam, thank you.
Yes, you could lose... Champions League to Real Madrid. You could lose the Premier League again by one stupid point
to City,
and then you could also get upset in the FA Cup final against Leicester.
Right? No, against Chelsea.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But if Everton gets relegated,
that'd be worth it to you.
Is it all okay?
Is it all right?
I would rather you win the trophies and stay up than get relegated and you
all
lose
right,
everything.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, stand back. It's time now for America's favorite soccer segment. It is known as The Dribble. All right. So Thursday night, I stumble across, accidentally, I didn't even know this was available to me on my television.
Okay. Weird.
BN Sport Global.
You get BN Sport Global on your TV?
It's a long story.
Okay.
It's one of those free streaming services
All
on
right.
a Samsung TV. They just happened to include it on there.
And so you went for it.
Well, I was like, I wonder what's on. I'm by myself. My wife's out of town.
Okay.
I'm all alone, only childing it.
And you're just looking
and
for
soccer. And I pop it on.
Soccer.
And I'm looking for soccer.
God,
I thought,
you are like the biggest soccer nerd.
You're a junkie.
And
he
I
is.
So here. Well, just wait till I tell you this story.
I love soccer.
So I actually turned on and stuck with a Sudamericana matchup.
Copa Sudamericana.
Sudamericana. And this is a game. Okay. This is a group stage game. Now, this is essentially South America's version of the Europa League.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
This is between one team, Banfield, an Argentinian team. I'm pretty sure I've heard of.
Yep.
And another one called Union La Calera.
Yep.
I have never heard of before.
They're a mid-table team from Chile.
They are actually at the bottom of the table currently in Chile, and I'm watching this game.
Okay.
And it is so bad, I'm beginning to wonder if I'm watching a USL 1 game.
Okay.
It is the most innocuous,
but you
lame.
Stick with it.
I'm doing something else at the same time. It's just on in the background. And I happen to look up in the most, literally an alien ship could have landed on the field, and I would have been less surprised than what then now transpires. Okay. Andy, I want you to watch this goal that is scored by the Chilean team.
Okay.
Watch the goal. Andy is going to watch this goal for the first time.
So Banfield has the ball on the edge of but they turn it over. Red team, Union La Carrera with the ball, right side of the field. Number 8 gets the ball, crosses into, oh my God! Sidewinding backwards bicycle kick on the run.
Is that not the craziest,
for
most...
the Chilean club?
Yes! While you're watching the replay, let me explain what's happening. The Chilean team is going forward. They have one striker who is in full sprint running into the box with a defender on either side of him. A perfect ball gets flighted into the box. He's not standing still. He is literally running at full pace towards the goal when the ball comes in, and somehow in the most Matrix way, not only turns his body upside down and flips it around, he perfectly snaps the ball on a bicycle kick in to win the game.
All in fluid motion. He's got to turn his body 90 degrees because he's facing the guy that's going to cross the ball.
Yes.
And then in one fluid motion, as he's running towards the goal, turns his body 90 degrees while he's moving.
Okay, because bicycle kicks typically are guys who are generally essentially standing in place waiting for the ball to come.
Behind him, so they have to turn
this
around.
Dude is running full pace. You have to see it. We just tweeted it out at the Kick Around. It is one of the nicest goals I've ever seen.
You know, ironically, you know what a bicycle kick is called in Spanish? What they
banana?
It's called a chilena.
Why is that?
Because a Chilean dude scored the first one.
That guy is Sebastian Saez. He's an Argentinian. He is 37 years old. He has played in Argentina, Qatar, the UAE, and has now kind of been banging around in the Chilean Premier League.
So the Argentinian scored a chilena playing for the Chilean team against an Argentinian team.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What a night. What an evening for you.
And so
you.
When you ask me, Andy, why would you waste your time watching a Copa Sudamericana game, it's because I think I got a payoff with what might be the coolest goal I have ever seen in all my years of watching this sport.
You need special props for is that you then took the time to find this somehow on social media to retweet it.
Yes, I did. I had to share it with everybody because it was so amazing.
This is what soccer nerds do.
They have to share the...
More props to Andy, though, for the description. It sounded like the Seinfeld episode with the loogie. Like, mid-air, like, that was perfect.
Yeah. Thanks.
Very nice. All right. I want to move on and real quickly ask Andy, related to South America, rumors related that your motherland of Chile, which has not qualified for the World Cup, got knocked out, has written a stern letter to the UIL, also known as FIFA, over something they claim Ecuador did bad.
Yeah, so, this is grasping for straws here. They are claiming... They're correct about their claim is correct. They're claiming an Ecuadorian player used not false passport, but a passport that had been doctored with and didn't have the right date and citizenship on the passport, and that he was using that passport. You know, the FIFA rules, your passport has to be not only up to date, it has to be correct and can't be doctored with. What Ecuador is saying is that that is all null and void because they actually granted the player who was born in Colombia citizenship, officially granted him citizenship before the qualifier
started.
5 minutes
before the game.
Before the qualifier started. So officially in the country, he is Ecuadorian.
Yeah,
so
sure
that
he is.
Takes precedence. FIFA is not going to change things now. They're not going to. Like if Ecuador says he's a citizen and on the record it states that he became a citizen prior to the qualifiers.
Who's the player?
I forget his name.
Did he play a lot in the qualifier?
He played a couple of games, but two against Chile. So Chile would get 6 points.
I see. All right.
Who's the name of the player? We have to say it. Byron Castillo.
Are you Byron embarrassed Castillo. By your motherland's attempt
no,
to
No, you have to do everything you
struck.
Can to get right. in. It's the World Cup. I hope they get it gets turned around, but it's not.
All right, Andy, I'm also going to ask you, is this the week or by the end of the month, will we officially know which American cities will be hosting World Cup games in 2026.
I've been told between mid-May and the beginning of July.
That sounds like the old Steve Martin bit from The Jerk. Guess your age and you will win this prize on this shelf somewhere between the double mint gum.
That's what we've been told. There's a little bit still back and forth and follow-up questions and things of that nature.
Will Dallas host?
Will Dallas host a game? We are fully confident Dallas will host World Cup matches.
Will the Death Star get the FIFA
Texas.
World
North
Cup?
North Texas.
Will Dallas, will the Death Star specifically get the World Cup final?
Man, that would be awesome if we were able
That's
to host
yes.
the final.
That's
huh?
not a yes.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Andy, I want to show you a picture. This leak that came out this week of Nike's supposed lineup for home and away jerseys for the U.S. men's national team for the World Cup later this year. Tell me, are you excited or bummed out by that?
I like the whites. Oh, but they got the little thingies, huh? The ridges. I don't like the blue.
Yeah, so like what I'm white. Looking at is essentially a white T-shirt with a sublimated, weird, you know, kind of wavy pattern, and then a light royal blue with a royal blue kind of shoulder and collar area for the away jersey, and with the same colored like royal blue shorts. And the home kit has navy shorts.
You know what? I still, my opinion, U.S. national team jersey needs to be dark blue top. Mm. White shorts, red socks.
Nope, it needs to be red and white hoops, top, navy shorts. But now I will say, this is just a leak. Nobody knows this is official. The Federation posted a photo yesterday back of the 94 World Cup with when they had the denim and the two crazy kits.
Yeah.
So they posted a photo of that team wearing the red and white bacon jersey with the denim shorts, and everybody wondered if that was some sort of like duplicitous throw-off, or are they going to surprise, like this leak is a throw-off.
Yeah, so that's a leak?
This is a leak. Nobody knows if that's real or not.
Okay.
I have to also go back to England and mentioned Luton Town. Did you see how Luton Town scored today?
No, I didn't see anything.
I've never seen this in a pro game. So Luton Town is 0-0. Mm-hmm. They don't know at this point if they've secured fourth place.
Right.
They're waiting for another result. They're playing Reading. Mm-hmm. The Reading goalkeeper's a Norwegian guy. He gets he saves a ball, and he's got it at the top of the box. And he's kind of wasting a little bit of time, and he throws the ball out in front of him, only to realize a Luton Town striker is hiding behind him, runs around, sneaks, and gets the ball and knocks it in just before halftime to take a 1-0 lead, which helps seals Luton Town fourth place. That is
I can't remember the game, but there's a very famous match where a goal got, like World Cup game, where a goal was scored like that.
Yes.
A hidden ball trick.
And in League Two, believe it or not, Scunthorpe, who needed 7 goals to make promotion, got 7 goals.
Okay, where's the payout? What happened there?
They got 7 goals in their game. Now, you're going to see in the records there was almost 20 minutes of injury time. That's because there was a pitch invasion. All the goals have been scored.
Wow. Okay.
They flooded the field and they had to clear it, and it took them 20 minutes to complete the game of injury time.
Say they got 3.
So congratulations. I think they were playing the Bristol Rovers, so they have gotten promoted to League One. There you go. There is another episode of The Dribble. What a good, fun show. All right, I'm out next week. Tyler will be sitting in my seat next week. Andy will be out the week following, and Tyler will sit in your seat then. You guys have fun. Talking about the week that you're gone. That's the final weekend of the Premier League.
Yeah, it'll be all done by then.
We'll get to I think it's going to come down to Arsenal versus Everton for both fourth place and the relegation spot. That's what it's going to come down to. I have no doubt about
it. You're going to miss the FA Cup final weekend.
Yeah, go check out all of those goals and a lot of the other stuff we've tweeted over on our Twitter account, at the kickaround. Thank you, Jacob, for doing fine tickers today. Thank you, Sam, for producing EA. Again, another good, stellar day running the board. P1s, we love and adore you. Go on out there, get stuck in, and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM, Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM, Flower Mound. a Cumulus Media station.